The sight was tugging at the hearts of all on board the Issachar. There wasn't one of them who didn't feel the urge to jump into the river and swim across the gulf. The gulf, between them and bliss, an eternal joy of song and wine which waited beyond the cruel divide which was their own world. "Don't," Murphy Hewlett said. Jenny's euphoria shattered like crystal as the discordant voice struck her ears. Murphy Hewlett's hand was on hers, pressing down painfully. She found her arms were rigid, tensed, ready to propel her over the side of the fishing boat. "What is that?" she asked. At some deep level she was bemoaning the loss, being excluded from the journey into a different future. Now she would never know if the promise was true. "Don't you see?" he said. "It's them, whatever they are. They're growing. They don't care about us seeing them unmasked any more. They don't fear us." The colourful, solid mirage sailed on regally down the river, its wake of joyous invocation tarrying above the brown water like a dawn mist. Jenny Harris stayed at the gunwale for a long time, staring into the west. The grove was a site of intense activity. Over 200 people were working away along the rows, positioning the collection cups around the weeping roses. It was early Duke Day. Duchess had just set, leaving a slight pink fringe splashing the western horizon. Between them the two suns had banished all trace of moisture from the torrid air. Most of the men and women tending the big weeping roses wore light clothes. The younger children ran errands, bringing new stacks of collection cups to the teams or supplying iced fruit juice from larger jugs. Joshua was feeling the heat, despite being dressed in a burgundy sleeveless T-shirt and black jeans. He sat on the back of his horse watching the cupping teams at work. The cups that were being hung so carefully were white cardboard cones, with a waxy, shiny inner surface 30 centimeters wide at the open end, tapering down to a sealed point. Stiff hoops, pasted onto the side, were used to wire them onto the trellis below the weeping rose flowers. Everyone he could see carried a thick bundle of wires tucked into their belt. It didn't take more than 30 seconds for them to fix each cup. "Is there one collection cup for every single flower?" he asked. Louise was sitting on her horse next to him, dressed in jodhpurs and a plain white blouse, hair held by a single band at the back. She had been surprised when he accepted her invitation to take the horses rather than use a carriage to get about the estate. Where would a starship captain learn how to ride? But ride he could, not as well as her, which gave her a little thrill, that she should be better than a man at anything. "Especially Joshua." "Yes," she said. "How else could you do it?" He gave the stacks of collection cups piled up at the end of each row a puzzled frown. "I don't know. Jesus, there must be millions of them." Louise had grown accustomed to his casual swearing now. It had shocked her a little at first, but people from the stars were bound to have slightly different customs. Coming from him, it didn't seem profane, just exotic. Perhaps the most surprising thing was the way he could suddenly switch from being himself to using the most formal mannerisms. "Cricklade alone has 200 groves," she said. "That's why there are so many cuppers. It has to be done entirely the week before midsummer when roses are in bloom. Even with every able-bodied person in the county drafted in, there's only just enough to get it finished in time. A team like this takes nearly a day to complete a grove." Joshua leant forwards in the saddle, studying the people labouring away. It all seemed so menial, yet every one of them looked intent, devoted almost. Grant Kavanagh had said that a lot of them worked through half of Duchess Night. They would never have got the work finished otherwise. "I'm beginning to see why a bottle of Norfolk Tears costs so much. It's not just the rarity value, is it?" "No." She flicked the reins and guided the horse along the end of the rows, heading for the gate in the wall. The foreman touched his wide-brimmed hat as she passed. Louise gave a reflex smile. He rode beside her after they left the grove. Cricklade Manor's protective ring of cedars was just visible a couple of miles away across the wolds. Where now? It was parkland all around, sheep clustering together under the lonely trees for shade. The grass was furry with white flowers. Everywhere he looked there seemed to be blooms of some kind, trees, bushes, ground plants. "I thought Wardley Wood would be nice. You can see what wild Norfolk looks like." Louise pointed at a long stretch of dark green trees a mile away, following the bottom of a small valley.